So when I moved to New York, you actually worked in French Connection, and then I was interviewing for an internship. I had my heart set on it being fashion, but you have to eat in New York. So I got a jewelry internship.
Welcome to the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast, brought to you by Milk Bottle Labs, Ireland's top-rated Shopify experts. Milk Bottle Labs build, upgrade, migrate, and market Shopify and Shopify Plus stores all over the world. Milk Bottle will migrate you onto Shopify with zero interruption, guaranteed. Or optimize your Shopify store and maximize store sales. This podcast is kindly supported by our favorite Shopify app and the only app we install in every store. Rewind.io is the leading backup solution for your Shopify store. We'll talk more about Rewind later. Now over to your host, founder of Milk Bottle Labs, Keith Matthews.
Hey folks, thanks again for joining us on the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast, where we discuss all things e-commerce and Shopify. Today I'm recording in Dublin City, just behind the very well-known shopping area, Grafton Street. And I'm delighted to be joined by a very well-known Irish jewellery entrepreneur, a mum, a bricks and mortar retailer, and curator and owner of Lurie Fine Jewellery, Louise Stokes. Louise, how are you?
I'm really good. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Great to have you. You didn't have long to walk, she didn't?
No, this is perfect. Like, this is like feels like home. I love it around here.
So you're probably, what, 500 yards from the shop?
Yeah. Literally just off Grafton Street. So right around from the Westbury Hotel. So we're very lucky to have that location.
Great. And I suppose for our international listeners then, Grafton Street really is the prime, would it be still the prime retail location?
Yeah, it's probably one of the main shopping streets in Dublin. So we are literally off a side street. So to be so close, I think we're literally 100 yards off the main shopping street in, I would say, well, in Dublin and in Ireland. So yeah, we're really lucky to have had that. It was a total fluke, but I suppose that's, you know, that's how it goes. But yeah, but now the city is really changing and there's little hubs of stores that are kind of collecting together. But it wasn't really like that when I first opened.
So you're effectively on a tributary street of Grafton Street. So do you get the overflow from the Christmas rush?
No, you do and you don't. Like, it's so different in retail because you get all the footfall figures, but you know, we're opposite building works. We've had buildings torn down. We've had rebuilding. We've had a new building going in. We've had paving. Like last year, they paved our street. So, you know, in our busiest time in November and December, there was cement outside. So you have all of those things. There's lots of deterrence. Like if somebody's walking down the street and they see building, they actually won't turn. You know, you can see that. It's all to do with parking. So there has been massive differences over the years we've seen. Like you used to see swarms of people, you know, kind of going off the side streets. But because of our location next to the Westbury, and that has been a huge pull for us because that's a really nice, you know, walk by trade for us.
Great. And you're there 12 years, aren't you?
Yeah. 2007.
Wow, that was just the start of the recession.
Oh, wait, 6 months. Of the crazy pre-recession, and then it all hit. So, yeah.
Okay, that's great. Well, as I said, look, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
I was doing some research, and I've heard you on a couple of other interviews, and the words "girl crush" and "style crush" were used. So, you have certainly created a wonderful reputation, and
you.
You know, well done on that.
Thanks.
Obviously, we're in discussion because we work together, and Peter migrated you over to Shopify this year, and we'll get to that later on.
Saint Peter,
yes, Saint Peter. That's he'll be impressed by that description.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I personally think your use of digital, your use of social media, your personal branding, and also your corporate branding, and I mean, you've taken the leap to sell abroad, and obviously Shopify is a big part of that. So we'll talk about that in a while. Let's just go back to the start. An internship in New York. Let's just give us some details on how you came across that, because I've also heard you say that you're as interested in fashion as interested in jewellery. So give us a little bit of history on that.
Yeah, I always call that my sliding doors moment. So I was in Trinity doing sociology and philosophy. So obviously I didn't have like a massive career path waiting for me after that. I didn't know. I worked in Brian Thomas all through college, worked for Louise Kennedy. So luxury retail was my part-time job. So that was, it had a huge influence on me. So when I moved to New York, you actually worked in French Connection and then I was interviewing for an internship. I had my heart set on it being fashion, but you have to eat in New York. So I got a jewelry internship. And that's what I mean is the sliding doors, because I had no, I didn't know a ruby from an emerald, but being, you know, it was a total gift of the gab. You have to, it's soul destroying, because anyone I really admire, there's lots of bloggers and influencers have moved to New York, but it's so hard. People don't see that side, you know, you're not known at all. You don't have the connections. You have to bang down doors. So the internship was, I call it Game of Thrones. It was a huge, massive manufacturing company. They took in 12 interns and you got assigned to a sales team. And it was just, I mean, it was basically everything you need to learn about the jewelry industry in a day-to-day job. Really, really hard, like crazy, like 90-hour weeks. But I then left them after a year and a half. So we had stone sorters, you had salespeople, merchandisers, the buyers were coming in. Now, I was probably only giving them bagels for breakfast, but...
So you got to see... You know, like the what we see now with your successful brand is the front end of it, okay?
Yeah.
Which is the sexy stuff.
Yeah.
But you actually got to see right down to the roots exactly how a jewelry business buys, sells, creates, curates, and distributes. Would that be correct?
Oh, yeah. Like from the, you know, where the stone sorters are there and they're washing out castings and the murky water, all that stuff that people don't see. And it literally was hilarious. It was like below basement, then it was basement, then there was shipping, then there was invoicing, then there was sales. So, to have an exposure. Now you're an intern, you're invisible. Okay, so no one even knows who you are or what your name is. But the exposure to that was the foundation for me. And for me, what I absolutely loved was this idea that, you know, you could create something in your mind, it goes to CAD, and then you see it through the process. And that was, you know, that sort of sparked my whole love of design and jewelry.
It was online selling of jewelry, was that prevalent at the time?
Nope.
Or was that early doors?
Super early doors. No.
Okay.
At that time, the basis for most businesses in fashion and jewelry was a multi-retail sales channel. So I worked on the JCPenney account. So they had 1,500 retail outlets at the time. We also sold to Walmart, but then we would, you know, the kind of base level. Then there was higher end retailers as well, like the Bloomingdale's. So everything was about getting a piece of jewelry into a company with multiple doors. Online didn't even come into it.
Okay. At what point did you end up getting in contact with Alexis Bitar then?
That was an intern. So that basically Alexis Bitar was sold in Brian Thomas and I knew Fumi who was selling it and she was like, and I loved the brand. So it was amazing. I had to send off a letter. I had to write a letter, had to like put my CV in. And
so you actually had to buy a stamp.
Yeah. Like actually had to post it. And I went intern for him during a show season. So I did that before I got my other internship and that really opened my eyes, because what I had then was one very short internship showing me the fashion jewelry side. I had never seen a piece of jewelry made of lucite that, you know, selling for like $500. All of the industry loved him. He was the booth you couldn't get in. He was busting. So I had that. And then I had my fine jewelry in internship training. So then when it came time to build my brand, I was able to go back to both those people, and your connections, you know, are key.
Okay. And then at what point did you realize then that you were going to focus on jewelry rather than fashion?
I mean, I always knew I wanted to have my own business, like the whole way up through college and everything. But I never knew exactly what. Was it going to be fashion design? What was it going to be? And I suppose it was the exposure living in New York, working for Alexis as an intern, you know, shopping in the markets, buying my friends gifts. And they would be like, wow, those earrings are amazing. And I was like, oh, they were $60. I just saw them. And I thought, hang on, there's a market here. You know, there was no room for another jeweler that was doing the same as everybody else. And also, it's a very historical, very family orientated business, generally people's fathers and grandfathers. I don't have a family history in that. So I knew if I was to do it, I was going to aim at a female customer. I wanted to merge my love of fashion with the jewelry. So the edit that I would stock would be from a fashion perspective, you know, what people are wearing right now. So that's the focus that we built.
But does that make it hard? Because then you as Lurie then has to also keep up with fashion trends, which you'd probably do that naturally. But do you have to watch what fashion lines are launching?
That's my life. I love that. That's like a complete. I mean, that's not a chore. I adore that. I drink and breathe and live. Yeah. Love it. I watch what people wear when they get on a plane. It's not even just about catwalks now, because I'm not about trends. It's not like, I don't believe in that. And funnily, with this whole movement of sustainability, that's what Lulerie was always built on, was that you don't buy 10 of something rubbish. You buy one really good thing. So no, that, I suppose the fashion just informs my aesthetic. But every day I'm looking for inspiration.
Yeah. That's very good. Very good. It's the most interesting point that you just made there, I think, is the fact that you didn't have a family in the business.
No, and that sort of sets you up. It's not easy to break into jewelry. You know, I had a lot of naysayers. People now still say it. Like, people would come in and be like, what? Alexis Vuitton that's made of lucite? How can you sell that? And then I stocked Me & Row, where Julia Roberts would have worn them. You know, none of the brands had previously been sold here. So there was a lot of resistance. And why are you doing that? And how come you're doing this? And who are you? And does your dad, one guy said to me, did your dad give you this shop?
Yeah.
That took that well, obviously.
Okay. I'd say you won't forget that person.
I don't deal well with that kind of, but it spurs you on. So I actually realized, oh, hang on, this is great. We are now so different. Let's go even more different.
Yeah. So, but you're also situated right smack bang amongst probably the top 10 jewelers in the city. Is that right?
Yep. So that's great.
It's great because, you, in technology terms, you effectively were a disruptor within the jewelry industry.
God, I never thought about it like that, but I always had, I think it's the New York training. You know, I remember moving home and somebody was really like, oh, and where are you opening? And I hope you won't take our business. And that's, you know, I spent my 20s in New York. Business breeds business. That was my training. It was like competitors, you know, everybody learns from everybody else. There isn't this closed little small-minded. There's enough for everybody. You just have to make it. And if you don't make it, well then, you know, that's on you. I wasn't going to be down some like island on my own, the only jeweler. Jewelry businesses all together will only bring more customers, and everybody has their own perspective. Like ESL moved to my street a couple of years ago and I was delighted Deirdre came in. She's actually one of the only other few female owners, and it's brilliant for me because I don't do pearls or we don't do like the higher end classic pieces. So I send them there. You know, there's a lot of jewelers around that breeds business. So that's excellent for me.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny they say that because within the Shopify community, we're quite helpful amongst each other. To our competitors, we're quite happy to share information. I mean, if the tide rises, all the boats will rise. So everybody wins.
Well, that's my philosophy. How I got all my jobs was somebody took a little bit of an interest or I got helped, you know, so I feel like you have to pass that back on. It's a big part of my job now when I manage a team or I have young girls coming in and, you know, they don't know where they're going. Of course, every one of them leaves to move to New York. So I need to stop with the telling people that. Yeah. But, you know, I did Going for Growth, which is an amazing community set up by Paula Fitzsimons, and I got Louise Phelan as my lead. That was a huge influence on me because...
That was the Enterprise Ireland initiative.
Yeah, so it's Going for Growth and it's for businesses like mine because you get caught. There's loads for startups, but there's nothing for growth. So, you know, I've been in business at that point 6 or 7 years. And I remember actually one person saying to me, but why are you doing this? You have a successful business. And I was like, no, in my business, there's no standing still. You have to be prepared for change. So, and we all sat around and shared all our stories, and the knowledge and the empowerment you have from that community is something that has stood to us surviving.
Yeah, okay. Before we move off the topic of New York, do you miss New York?
Oh yeah, of course I do. My heart stops every time I see it on the movies. Like it's a running joke in my family. But I think it's a certain time in your life. You know, I have two young kids now. I went back for a wedding last year. What I miss, I suppose, for me is the mindset and the can-do attitude and the moving there at 22 and saying, I want to be a rock star. I want to be this. I want to be that. And people going, yeah, no worries. Like my boss in my last company, Howard, who was a maverick in the jewelry industry, I walked in so cocky, like 24. I want to be this and I want to be this and I want, you know, I want to have my own accounts and I want to travel. And he's like, okay, well, you do 2 months and I want to see and then we'll go from there. And he gave me the accounts. You know, that attitude where you have a goal, you work really hard and people aren't trying to make you think small. That's the freedom I miss.
Let's take a short break and I'll share the one app we install on every Shopify build. The team at Rewind.io have developed the leading backup solution for Shopify. Did you know there is no way of recovering lost data from a Shopify store? Rewind.io automatically backs up your store data. In the event of a data loss, usually due to human error, Rewind enables you to rewind your store back to its previous state. It's so simple and is used by some of the world's leading Shopify agencies, such as Kurt Elster of EtherCycle and Kelly Vaughan at The Tap Room. If your store is gaining traction, you may have multiple users making changes. Often store owners allow team or app developers enter a store to add code. Sometimes mistakes happen and data gets deleted. You can reduce your business risk today and prevent a costly catastrophe by installing the Rewind.io app on your Shopify store. Get your first month of Rewind for free by simply responding to any of the welcome messages or emails you receive after you begin your 7-day trial and mention this podcast. Now, back to the interview.
Yeah, it's the opposite. I'm very lucky, actually. I spent quite a bit of time there over the last... I did a J1 over there.
Oh, yeah.
And then I spent quite a bit of time with work over there for about 5 years, in and out. And it's an addictive city. Definitely addictive.
Yeah, it's the energy and the pulse. And did you find that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's the can-do, you know.
Yeah, me too.
They just have this kind of unstoppable ambition.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I think is hard to express here.
Yeah.
I think the culture here is changing.
Absolutely.
I think that technology is driving that. But certainly, you know, regarding Lurie, we're talking about something that was happening in pre-2007. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think the culture was culture here was very different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so back in Ireland.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a very obvious question. Where did the name come from?
Oh, yeah, that's my friend Marie. That's not me. And she makes me always tell me.
You.
Yeah. No, I was home from New York and I was telling them what I was wanting to do, and all my friends call me Lulu, and they're like, oh, you should call it Lulu. And I was like, why? And then they were like, you know, Lou and jewelry. So yeah, my friend Marie named it.
And obviously now you're on Shopify.
Yeah.
So you're now using Shopify, I think, about 6 months.
For the second time.
Yeah. So let's just talk through that. So you were actually a Shopify customer
five
years ago, was it?
Yeah. So I probably, out of all, we were one of the very early businesses to have an e-commerce site. So we had it, but it wasn't shoppable. I did all the stupid things, like had dragonflies on my home screen because you think it looks pretty and you realize that nobody cares about that. So we did that. And then I just knew how important it was. I suppose the brands that I do are international. I started to design my own line and I thought, hang on, I really need to look at this. So we used Shopify, but it would have been maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It didn't have what it has now. And we moved away from that to a bespoke, which was excellent in terms of the beautiful aesthetic that we wanted. But I suppose in one way, it's with technology, I felt like our Instagram was actually better than our website because we weren't able to change it quick enough. And that's what our business is. You have to be able to change. You have to update your content so quickly. You have to provide something new. And it has to be done from your phone. I also opened, you know, a second store. We were doing pop-ups and I needed something. Like, my phone is my business, you know, and I cannot tell you how much change it has made in terms of running the business from every side. Finance, it was Tara who pushed for Shopify again because she's our marketing manager and she runs the online. But every part of the business has benefited. I love the ching. It's my favorite. My kids are like, how much is that, mummy? You know.
So for our listeners who don't use Shopify, when you download the Shopify app and you get a sale.
Yeah.
What's the sound, Louise?
Ching! It's the best sound ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a Shopify merchant, we run a few stores of our own, and on a regular basis, my wife will run to the phone to see what value the sale is.
Yeah. I'm super like nerdy. I love analytics because I did part of that in my degree. So I'll click in, I'll look at who it is, where they shopped, what they've bought, have they shopped with us before? You know, like, I find that level of knowledge. I think I've had to really change. For so long, I just set up a shop. That was what I wanted to do. I didn't realize that I had built a brand. You don't realize until you're in it. And then with the online, that's why we moved to Shopify, because for me, I really see the future. I think there's very much a partnership between online and bricks and mortar. I think your bricks and mortar has to be extremely experience based. It has to be very special. It has to be about your relationships. But you cannot do that without an amazing online. I worked the floor yesterday, and that's also an important part of my job. And I'd say 90% of people said, yeah, I was on your website last night. The two go hand in hand. I think for many years, I was like, will I do one or the other? Multiple retail expansion is just not there for me. I think pop-ups are a fantastic way to do that. But the online and having that access through Shopify, We're packing up tomorrow to go to Cork. We were able to build a third location. We now know where all our stock is at one time. And just the analytics that it gives you, I've begun to now realize we knew so much about our customers coming in bricks and mortar. And that's what we've built our brand on. But you can also now do that online. And people are expecting you to know that as well.
Yeah, I think with you, it's especially important in the space that you're in, because your average order value is more than likely going to be higher than the average order value of a non-jewelry store.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of people don't get that. Mm. I think what Shopify has done is we talk to a lot of people that have been burned in the past.
Yeah.
And they've been told that the system can do this and do that, and it hasn't.
Yeah.
And they spend 2 years deciding to move.
Yeah.
And in that 2 years, they've probably lost 10 or 20% of the revenue.
Yeah.
And they haven't even got any data on any of the subscribers that or customers that they had.
Yeah.
So your experience is identical to
to
our experience. Now you're also using Shopify POS in your retail location.
Yeah.
How is that working? Because sometimes we've heard that it's not flexible, or it doesn't have the features maybe that a dedicated enterprise POS would have. But are you finding it okay?
No, my team absolutely love it. I'm the one that can't use it, but I'm a tech phobe, so that's fine. I find it easy. It's totally transformed how we run the business. Before, we would have had to do maybe 2 days training at least just on POS. Now, our previous POS, they were a fantastic company with a great relationship with them. But you have to realize sometimes in business, I feel like there's that 18 months where you're actually using something that doesn't suit your business anymore, but you're just too terrified to leave. And for now, the training would be like maybe 30 minutes an hour. It's a visual, like it's absolutely foolproof in terms of, for us, we have a lot of changing stock. We have a lot of seasonal stock. So being able to find that, there's lots of things like being able to print the gift receipt. Okay, there's always going to be a drawback and you have to weigh up your pros and your cons. But for us, the pros were the quickness of it. The fact that we can bring an iPad to Cork and have our shop right there. That was transformational.
So just explain that to our listeners. So as a Shopify user, regardless of what account you're on, you have access to POS, which is free.
Yeah.
And so what you do then is you choose a location, you move the stock down. So do you create a location in Shopify, just download the app to an iPad?
We call it pop-up. Yeah.
Pop-up. Okay.
Yeah, and that means that on my phone then I have access. So I know I know what the online store is doing. I know what the pop-up is doing and I know what our actual store is doing. I know what products they are. And post pop-up post a week, I can then look at, okay, what's in our online store? What's selling there? What can we improve? Like, It's unbelievable. I mean, for Shopify, the other thing is the ease at which you can update content.
Louise, at the moment, with our portfolio of Shopify customers that are predominantly online only, some of them have the omnichannel, they have bricks and mortar as well. They're seeing organic growth of probably 7 to 15% without any effort.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of them who properly utilize email are probably seeing more, maybe up to 25%. Do you see... retail is getting a bit of a bad hit at the moment, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. That's not like it's in New York, it's London, it's everywhere. Are you seeing that trend downwards or flat growth? Or, I mean, are you positive, let's say, for the next 5 years of your bricks and mortar store?
Yeah, I am positive. I think you have to change your expectations. And I think that now the focus of my business is that they grow hand in hand. I mean, I would hope that we would still have our Chatham Street store. That's my baby. That's kind of our flagship. It's very small. It's very manageable. I think that that's a very important thing to talk about. When everybody was opening these amazing stores, my budget was absolutely nothing. I did everything myself. You know, we ripped up the carpets. I had no credit card machine. So I suppose the way I built the retail store was I managed with what I had until I earned the money to spend, you know, like in terms of a sign and a canopy. So I didn't have this ridiculous investment hanging over me. Now it's tiny and we've probably outgrown it, but I think what it is it's very special and it's very easy to manage. And there have been some terrifying trends in retail where I did question it. You know, like I would have spent pretty much 4 or 5 years in college working Brown Thomas and working, you know, retail for Christmas. And Sundays and Saturdays were off the charts. You know, Thursday evenings, there's no predictability now.
It's funny you mentioned that. Is Thursday night shopping, is that gone?
Kind of. I think, yeah. It's just not like, say, we used to open till 8 or 9, or I remember a couple of years for Christmas, we would have to open. Like, we would be bursting at like 7 and 8 o'clock. Yeah, I think it's not gone, but I think people are maybe more going for drinks now or popping in. The same thing with the weekends. I think people value their time. I'm a mom too. I'm not trekking around in Lulerie on a Saturday afternoon. Yeah. Now I'll pop in and out and I have to do things. And our location again there is key because we're beside all the amazing hairdressers. We're beside Brown Thomas who are off Grafton Street. So you will still get that, but there isn't you cannot predict. You can't put a projection because the other thing is in 12 years, people are like, how's business? I'm like, we're great because you know what? We've had a recession, building works, cementing of our front road, snowstorms, ice storms, you know, like you just have to roll with it. And then that was the point. Actually, I think it was the second bad snow that I thought, oh my God, hang on. You know, that's when online becomes your lifeline.
Okay. For your particular brand and for your particular product, it's curated. Mm. It's very personal and there's a value to it. So do you think that a brand like yourself would always need some sort of a retail element? Because people, even though they may buy online, do they still want to go into the shop to touch it and feel it and look at it?
Yeah, I believe so. But if you were to ask me now and if I was starting, no, I would. I don't know if I'd start with a retail. I think pop-ups, I think engaging, I think it's very interesting. Even let's take a company like Away who are so successful with the luggage. You know, they have a store in London. You look at, you know, anybody here who's like really, like there's a lot of international brands that still do pop-ups. I think it's really interesting that even the global luxury brands do a pop-up in summer locations like Mykonos has become a big thing. So I think there's lots of different opportunities, and I don't think bricks and mortar is essential, but I think it'd be a very sad world to live in without any individual beautiful boutiques. And we have some amazing ones in Dublin, but I do think your growth, if that's what you want to do, is online.
Yeah, I've been in your shop several times, and I think it's stunning.
Thank you. It's tiny. It's busy, and there's four of us.
That's part of the beauty about it, though.
Yeah.
And you know, I've listened to and I've read, you know, in researching the conversation, and you know, you are I mentioned earlier on girl crush and style crush.
Don't know about that.
There's a couple of heavy hitters in the fashion industry in Ireland would regard Lulerie as the brand, the go to brand actually. So I mean, I'll give you credit where credit is due.
Yeah, I mean, with that though, thank you. But that came out of like, so the recession hit at 6 months. It was amazing. And then, you know, the world fell apart in terms of retail and no one, like there was tumbleweeds going down our street. So I was very lucky that I actually had a fashion background before I moved to New York. So the stylists, I realized, fine jewelry was what we predominantly were doing at the time. And I thought, hang on a second, people aren't paying their mortgages. They're not able to pay their rent. I have to come up with something different. So we put in some really, really cool edited fashion brands. And then stylists wanted to use them. And then editors wanted to use them. So that developed our relationship with the press. And then they knew. And then I thought, oh, great, we can go to Paris or London or New York and we can always have something new. So I kind of have always had a few chinks to the bow. And you can't just have one.
Yeah.
Chinks to your armor, not your bow.
Chinks to your armor, yeah.
You have to be always evolving and looking at adding something new.
Okay, so in terms of the future of jewelry itself, do you see any trends? Do you see, I mean, the obvious trend when you ask anybody is, oh, well, it's going to be driven by Instagram or, oh, well, it's going to be driven by social media. But are you, like, you were kind of ahead of the curve. So have people followed or is there a new trend that you see?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the whole point with having a brand like Lulerie is that we're supposed to be ahead of the curve. We're supposed to be finding things new. And it's for, you know, I suppose the whole objective I always say is I don't want someone to click on our site or go on our Instagram or walk by the window and be like, boring, seeing that. I want them to be like, ugh, do they sell bird earrings? That's the whole, you have to excite. So I suppose the one thing I've really seen is my background, obviously, in New York was a lot in fine jewelry. And I knew always, even through the recession, that was our biggest area of growth because it's what people come back to. Even if, you know, it's a recession and there isn't a lot of money around, it's a luxurious product that you will have forever. You know, an investment in a fine jewelry piece is way better than something that is going to fall apart over, you know, a couple of years. So that kind of throwaway fashion jewelry, I have seen so many brands come and go in that. So that's why I started to design. I started with 3 pieces and then I put 4 pieces into the store. And now I can't believe it. We're now shooting our own editorials just for the fine jewelry. And that for me is the marrying of, I suppose, we give it context. We show how you wear it with a cashmere sweater or a blazer, and it's a tiny little diamond piece. So the love for minimalism has been my own aesthetic anyway, but you there is a huge trend out there. Of course, the Scandinavian designers, the New York designers, the Instagram brands, that minimalist trend is out there. But we don't focus so much on trends because I've seen so many come and go. But it's great for me to see that people are now like, there isn't a price resistance, even on our Shopify. Our fine jewelry does sell really well.
And when you talk about, you know, I suppose, for the want of a better word, disposable jewelry.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent kind of a fast fashion, is it, where people buy things.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah, you don't know what's in it. You don't know what the metal is. It's going to fall apart. It's a great price point. It might look brilliant, but jewelry at the end of the day is on your body. You know, if you're buying a necklace that's physically worn every single day or a ring, it has to be a precious metal. You have to have something sustainable. You know, there's so much work we do now with who we work with, where they source their stones, what kind of metal. We use the Kimberley process. You know, there's all of those things. But the thing is, you'll still have it in 20, 30 years. It's supposed to be something that you get, remember, and give to your children or, you know, will outlive you.
Louise, it's been a wonderful conversation and I could talk to you all day. I have to say, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to somebody that is so passionate about what they do. So thank you very much for your time and wish you all the best in the future.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Milk Bottle Shopify e-commerce podcast. All of our episodes are available on Spotify and iTunes. We really appreciate the support of our sponsor, Rewind.io, the leading backup solution for your Shopify store. Get your first month of Rewind for free. Just respond to any of the welcome messages or emails after you begin your 7-day free trial and mention our podcast. Until the next time, take care.